I think we're live. Hi, I'm Shannon Brewer. This is Allison Reddick, and we are here to answer your questions for Hill and Ponton. Any veterans law questions that you have, we will do our best to answer them. So we'll just jump right in.
Yep, excited to be here.
Okay, our first question is from Dave Peter. This is part one of three. Thank you for your help in getting me 100% permanent and total combined rating with SMCK and S effective December 7th, 2023. My ratings are now 100%. Left ventricular hypertrophy with congestive heart failure and stable angina with 1 to 3 Mets, 30% stage 3 kidney disease with diabetic nephropathy and kidney abscesses, 20% prostate cancer residuals, 20% diabetes, 10% hypertension, 10% per foot for bilateral diabetic peripheral neuropathy. All of my disabilities are related to Agent Orange exposure at Ramsan Station, Thailand from December 74 to March 76. My claim for TDIU was considered moot since it would have the same effective date as the 100% scheduler award. Okay, if that is the question, whether IU should be moot or not, if it's gonna be exactly the same as your 100%, technically, yes, it's moot. The only thing that I can see that you might wanna look at there is if you are unemployable due to only one, he said he's special monthly compensation S already, didn't he? Okay,
yes.
So yeah, that's correct then. IU is moot unless there's some kind of advantage to you. But if you're already getting SMCS, then probably that's the only thing I could think of that you would want to look at unemployability for.
The only other thing I would think of is if you or need aid in attendance, that would be the next level of SMC that you could try for. If you need help with your activities of daily living, you need someone to help you go to the restroom or, brush your teeth or get dressed, things like that, especially having 1 to 3 Mets. A lot of times you'll be so out of breath, it'll be hard for you to dress yourself or be mobile on your own. That would be something to look into. And that would be having one of your providers fill out VA form 2680. Just make sure you only put your service connected conditions on there. Because if you put non-service connected conditions on there, then they'll say you need aid in attendance due to that and they will deny it.
Shocker.
Okay, Channel of Love, Hope, and Faith, part one of two. 60% GERD rating proposed cut to 10. Appealed stayed 60. CMP exam noted mistakes in previous DBQ where my esophageal cancer was directly linked to GERD wasn't considered, even though they were aware. Should I have been rated 100% for the time cancer was active? Cancer was active during service connection time frame. They never put me in for 100%, only 60. Would this be DTA? I requested higher level review. I would think when you filed your claim and you had active cancer, you should have 100% rating for that time period. It seems like they initially service connected you for the GERD and then realized it was secondary to the cancer, but yes. And then you have that 100% rating until you are in remission. And then 6 months after that, they will do the proposal to reduce and base your rating off of residuals. Anything to add, Shannon?
Nope, that's exactly what I would have said. Okay, this one's from Sergio Alvarez. My TDIU claim is moot. The VA raised my PTSD rating to 100% and 30% for Parkinson's. The VA granted housebound benefits. Am I allowed to work? You absolutely can. If you have 100% scheduler rating, not unemployability, then VA does not care if you work. They don't care how much money you make. That's of no interest to them at all. So yeah, you can work as much as you want and earn as much as you want.
And 30% is minimum rating for Parkinson's. So if you're happy with where you're at, I would leave it alone. But if your Parkinson's gets worse, you should be getting separate ratings for all of your individual symptoms. But since you have the 100%, I would probably leave it alone.
I would too.
Okay, Harris Womble, 1 of 5. Okay, I was awarded a 60% rating for GERD on 24 August 23. I was awarded 30% for IBS, December 23. However, due to the rules in place, the IBS was added to the GERD diagnosis. And since I had the highest rating allowed for GERD at 60%, my rating was continued without any additional rating for IBS. The new rules effective in May separate GERD and IBS into two separate categories. Can I request the additional 30% rating for IBS now be applied independently of GERD? If so, how do I accomplish that? Will the request have any negative effects on my 60% GERD rating? If I file for the new rating before the effective date, won't the VA have to give me the GERD and the IBS rating most favorable to me? Will I be required to take new CMP exams for one or both disabilities? I am within 1 year of the IBS rating. Would this be an appeal or a request for increase? I have never seen them put IBS and GERD together. Have you seen that?
I have. Yeah. It's they used to think it was pyramiding, which is stupid because they're completely different. You know, all the symptoms are completely different, but somehow they thought that was pyramiding. But I had heard that they were going to separate them out. I didn't know it was May. I hadn't seen the effective date for that. But I have seen them lump those together.
So if they do change it, though, we would have to look at the regulations. It's probably only going to be based on the date that regulation becomes active. So I don't think you would get an earlier effective date for that. But also, that's something we would need to look into the regulation. But if they are separating it out, absolutely, you should have a separate rating for the GERD and a separate rating for the IBS. Luckily, I have not seen that where they've lumped them together. But most likely, if you do request that, then they are going to ask for new exams. And that may affect your ratings. I mean, 60% for GERD is a very good, that's a high rating. And so if you have those symptoms and it's documented in your records, then there shouldn't be any issue of reduction, but you never know with VA. And I would always file a supplemental. Well, if you've never filed for an increase, you would have to file the 526 for the increase.
Except he's within 1 year of the IBS rating.
Oh, so then he could file
appeal it.
Yeah, he can appeal. So I'll definitely appeal the IBS rating. But depending on the date that regulation goes into effect, that's most likely going to be the effective date. They're not going to give you retroactive benefits on that. That's something we'll definitely look into and do a video on if that is actually happening in May.
Okay, this one's from Ms. Joystick, part one. Last week I asked if you could be service connected for ovarian cancer due to asbestos exposure. The answer was yes. I was denied because the examiner stated there is no substantial medical literature to support that veterans exposure to asbestos during service can lead to the development of ovarian cancer. The VA conceded my exposure as I was an engine man in the Navy. They also had two medical opinions, but I only saw one in the decision. What can I do now? You need your own medical opinion. Whether they always kind of say, oh, well, there's no medical, they very often say there's no medical literature to support that. And there is, that right there is an inadequate exam. They didn't consider the medical history. They didn't consider the correct literature. So, I would appeal that absolutely. And your best bet is to get your own medical opinion because they're just going to give you another bad CMP exam because they're not good with toxic exposure. The CMP exams on that are pretty inadequate.
Especially with asbestos exposure. If it's not anything to do with your lungs, they're going to deny it. But definitely yeah. There's medical literature out there. Get your own opinion. I agree. Okay, Gateway, good day. Would the VA attempt to reduce your rating while you are on appeal at the BVA? Thanks. They're not supposed to because the jurisdiction is with the board, but that doesn't mean they don't do it. I see when there are appeals at the board and things happen at the regional office all the time. They could still attempt to reduce your rating, especially if you had a new CMP exam while it was pending based on like a new claim for unemployability or something. And they see that your condition has gotten better, absolutely they can try to reduce it at the same time. They kind of do what they want.
You just got to keep in mind, though, I mean, on the one hand, we do kind of preach don't mess with it sometimes if you've got a great rating, and sometimes it's time to go away and not draw attention to yourself. But if you have a really good appeal to go to the board and it's worth some money to you, you can't let them scare you off You can fight the reduction. If your rating is solid, I wouldn't worry about that. You know, if you meet all the criteria, but if you're kind of sketchy on it and you look at it and you're kind of lucky they gave you that rating, then at that point, you know, then you let it scare you away. But evaluate your claim and think about it before you let that scare you. Okay, this one is ST. Any idea why Haskell versus McDonough is taking so long, reference to SMCT? They just take as long as they take. Cases, so, you know, if I'm not sure what the where this is procedurally, but appeals, you know, if they have to go to panel or if there has to be an oral argument, you know, those kind of things have to get scheduled. And yeah, it's... not really. I don't really know why in particular it would be taking a long time, but it could be anything. They may ask for more briefs. They may ask for oral arguments. You know, it may just take them a while to consider things. So I don't really have a good answer for that one.
Happiness. I get that SMCT is impossible, but should we work on 100% for dissociative disorder for TBI, PTSD, or somehow apply for SMCT? If dissociation is episodic, would that qualify for SMCT benefits with the need for supervision? So do post-traumatic or cervogenic headaches from TBI count as a rating for migraines? That's a lot. Okay. So SMCT was specifically created for TBI. You're not going to get SMCT, from my understanding, unless you have TBI. The other conditions are not going to count for that. The post-traumatic headaches from TBI count as a rating for migraines. Absolutely. That it doesn't matter whether it's called migraines or if it's called headaches, they're both rated in the same way. And if you've had a initial CMP exam or you have a diagnosis of headache secondary to TBI, that should be an inferred issue that would be secondary to the TBI.
Yeah, they're not impossible, but they're really hard. The SMCT claims it's a lot of money and the VA doesn't want to give it away. So they're going to make you fight for that one, but it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we've definitely won them and have plenty pending at the board. And I know because of that case, some of them are kind of halted because they're waiting for Haskell to see what happens with that. So that case is going to have a lot of effect on all the current claims, but if you have severe residuals of TBI, don't let that stop you from trying to get it, because if you have it, you deserve it. It's just VA is going to tell you no, and they're going to tell you no, and they're going to tell you no, because they don't want to give that money away. But if you truly should have it, then, you know, get the evidence, and it'll take time, but it's possible to get.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, this one's from Anthony Rivers. Let's see, SC4. I'm not sure what that means. Radiculopathy secondary to cervical. 2 months later, VA sends letter asking for a second medical opinion. No explanation for anything else, nothing. If I ignore, what steps VA has to take to get rid of my rating? Let's see, hold on, let me read that again. Okay, service connected for radiculopathy secondary to, okay. And then they asked for another medical opinion, no explanation if you ignore it. Okay. So my feeling is if they ask for a CMP exam, you need to go to the CMP exam. Not everybody agrees with me on that. Some people will tell you it's okay to skip one. I find that if you skip it, you're going to get denied, or they're going to try to reduce you. You know, they're going to say you didn't show up and they're going to hold it against you. Go to the medical opinion, or, you know, go to the CMP exam. See, you can always, if it's only been 2 months, they don't have to do much to get rid of that rating. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of steps they have to go through. I mean, they have to tell you they're going to do it. They have to give you time to submit evidence, but it's not that hard for them to reduce you. So I would go to the exam.
Absolutely. Anytime that's asked me, do I really need to go to? Yes. I always say go to the exam, because I agree. That's just giving them reason to deny or reduce. Okay, Cassius Williams. I want to know if I can get SMCO to SMCT when I have a 2680 filled out from a physician that related to TBI. So like I said before, my MRI confirmed that I had TBI and now I have residuals of the TBI. Will the VA make me appeal in order to receive SMCT? No more. Okay. So like I said before, SMCT is completely separate from like if you want to get to SMCO, you're trying to get to like SMC R1 or R2 because that is the equivalent of SMCT. But in order to get to SMCO, you have to have some kind of loss of use, usually bilateral hands or bilateral feet, things like that, which a lot of TBI vets don't have. So that's why they carved out this separate higher level for TBI vets. If you have loss of use, then yeah, absolutely, you can get to SMCO, but there's no reason for O if you're trying to get to T because they're two completely separate things. I don't know if I'm explaining that right, but do you get what I'm saying, Shannon?
I do, yeah. I think probably just, you know, if you have a TBI and your records show that and it's related to service, I'm not sure if you were service connected with the TBI or not already, but that's the way you get to SMCT. If you need aid and attendance and you need help due to your TBI, that's how you get there. And like Allison said, the O is different. But if you know, it's basically SMCT, you're just looking at, do you need help due to your TBI?
So, and you can get aid and attendance on its own with the 2680 for SMCT or like for TBI. Sorry. SMCT is reserved for veterans who basically would have to be in nursing home care or be institutionalized. That's what they're looking for. It's constant aid and attendance, whereas the regular aid and attendance is regular. It's, you don't need someone caring for you all the time. So there's different levels. If you have residuals of TBI, but you're able to do some things on your own, but you need some help, then the 2680 is going to be for the regular aid and attendance. But if your doctor who's filling that out checks off that you would need nursing home care, then that's when you're looking for, okay, maybe I qualify for SMCT, but I wouldn't go the O route.
Okay, I've lost track. Is it my turn? Yes. I think it is. Okay. Christopher Goldsberry has this question for us. I was just recently diagnosed with Crohn's disease and was wondering how I can have it service connected. I have an evidence sub-appeal at the BVA from 2022. Will this make it advanced on the docket? Let's see. So if your Crohn's, if your evidence appeal is on the Crohn's disease, I'm not sure. I don't see anything there to advance on the docket. They're very strict about what they're going to advance on the docket. If you are over 75, yes. If you have a terminal health condition or a really severe deteriorating health, yes. Financial, they say they expedite those. I very rarely see them do it unless you're homeless. And then they will expedite that one as well. But those are the only real reasons I ever see them expedite. As far as how you can have your Crohn's disease service connected, it's pretty much, I mean, it's the same as any other disability. If you need to prove that it's related to service or related to a service-connected condition. I don't know specifically what your situation is and, you know, when you served or where or anything like that, but you need an incident in service, you need a nexus.
Happiness again. Is the VA allowed to tell the CMP examiners they can't look through the vet's files or DBQs so they can have their own fresh opinion? No, they are supposed to review the record. If you look at the DBQ, they will check off records reviewed and they will check off in-person examination if it's an in-person examination. But it depending on if it's service connection, yeah, they definitely need to review it to see if they can service connect it. But even for increased rating to get a continuity of care and what the level of symptoms are, I don't think they're going in and saying, don't look at the veterans' records.
We're not supposed to be.
Yeah, or they're not. They're definitely not supposed to be. But having your own fresh opinion, that's not really the point of it. Like, you need to look at the record as a whole, especially if they're trying to reduce your rating or something. You're not supposed to reduce a rating based off of one examination. So you really do want them to look at the record to say, to see, oh, you know, this vet was like the person who had the question, they just had a CMP exam 2 months ago. Is there really going to be that much of a change in 2 months? Probably not. But yeah, they're not allowed to tell them they can't look at it.
Okay, this one's from another step. I have seen questions from you before, so welcome back. I have wrist problems, one injury, one carpal tunnel, both on active duty, not concerned about service connection. At the time, not bad enough to be rated, did not file. I am now experiencing pain in both wrists and mentioned it to my VA primary care. He has made appointments for x-ray and OT. I currently have an intent to file dated 3/24. Is it better to wait and submit my wrist claim after my appointments so I have more information and know exactly what I'm filing for? As always, thank you for your time. So because you have the intent to file in already, I would probably, I mean, your effective date is set. So I would probably wait until I'd had those appointments and get my diagnosis so you don't get a quick denial. If you didn't have an intent to file, I would recommend you go ahead and file one, just because you don't want to lose your effective date. But since that's there, yeah, it's not going to hurt either way. But if you go ahead and file now without the correct evidence, they could go ahead and deny, and then you'd have to appeal it.
Okay, Mrs. Joystick, I have residuals from the ovarian cancer. Do I need to wait until it's service connected in the appeal process before I claim chronic fatigue and neuropathy? I would all go ahead and claim it now. Like Shannon said, you want to protect your effective date. So the earlier you put that claim in, that's when your effective date starts. Now, could they quickly deny it and say that no, because the ovarian cancer isn't service connected yet? Absolutely. But you want the earliest effective date possible, and you're experiencing symptoms secondary to the ovarian cancer. So I would put it in as soon as possible. Then you kind of keep it on appeal until you get the ovarian cancer service connected. And then you may need medical opinion for something like that. But absolutely, I've actually been seeing CMP exams from the QTC and through VA where they're giving neuropathy secondary to chemotherapy. Not often, but I've seen it, which is very surprising.
That's great.
Yeah, I've seen two of them recently because of the extent of putting that and the radiation as well. I think one was radiation and one was chemotherapy. But those are residuals that you may need a medical opinion for, but go ahead and put them in now so you can preserve your effective date.
I agree with that. Okay, this question's from Richard Pope. Filed several claims and let VA request my after service medical records, which are quite large. Was this a mistake, and should I try to correct it or let it ride and see what happens? Is there a way to get an accident report from 35 years ago? This was during my military time and happened driving from one side of the base to the other. It was an MVA. Okay. So as far as the medical records, people kind of have different feelings about that. I tend to like to get the medical records myself so that I can look at them before they go to the VA, so that if there's anything in there I don't want the VA to have, I don't give it to them. That's my feeling about it, but it's probably going to be easier on you if they get them for you. So I wouldn't be super concerned if they've already got them. It's not a huge deal. They don't look at them anyway. I mean, well, they do. Okay, they're supposed to, but usually we have to point out the stuff we want them to look at anyway. So, that's my feeling about it. Other people don't feel the same way. Like, I don't usually recommend just giving them access to the medical records, but that's just me. As far as an accident report from 35 years ago, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it'll be hard. You'll need, if it happened on the base, I don't even know where you would get those records. I know occasionally, like if it's sheriff's office and things like that, they might have an archived record depending on the office. Sometimes there's no chance. I don't know if the base would have that or where. I've never, have you ever tried to get something like that, Allison?
I tried to get records for a motor vehicle accident in Germany. And that, obviously, that was even more difficult. And no, we could not find it. If it was something that was severe, I know in the Germany case, we were trying to find newspaper records. We were trying to find anything that would associate with it. Or I know it was a long time ago, if there was anyone that you are still in contact with that could corroborate that it happened.
That's true.
But with regard to the medical records, I'm the same way as you. I feel the same way. If I can get it myself, I will. And my only hesitancy with them having it is it could delay the process because they will say they're looking for records and they just kind of keep extending and extending and extending and it takes forever. But it's not a big deal if they are getting them or if they have them. Old Soldier, how long are you seeing for VARO to address BVA remands? One came back on December 22, 2023, initial review conducted, and an evidence gathering since January 4th, 2024. VA 800 operators say they cannot put a notice in file. Thank you for everything you do. So the whole point of AMA was they're like, we're going to reduce the amount of remands. You know, I've seen them increase and they will sit for a long time. I mean, I have remands from even 6 months ago, if more, because they are just piling up. They just have, they're so backlogged. But there's not really anything I think you can do. Even if you put a notice in the file, like they put a general report of information saying that you called and asked about it, it's not going to do anything. The only way to speed it up is to have a reason for expedite, which is, in my opinion, even harder at the regional office than the board. But that's normal. Don't feel like it's just your case. The remands are taking a long time.
They are. The only thing I would say is, so, and I have one that's been, it was remanded in December 2022 and we still don't have a decision and we have been screaming for it and we don't have it. But what you want to do is make sure they didn't accidentally close it. So I would call the VA and make sure that appeal, that that's still open, that they have the remand open and they know they're supposed to be doing something with it, because they will close a file and not tell you and they just drop it. And you can get it reopened, but you just have to be aware that it's closed. So if they haven't made a decision and it's been a long time, been over like 6 months to a year, I would call and just make sure it's still open. Okay, this one's from Ralph Joyner. I have a diagnosis for a presumptive illness. Do I still need to sign up for the Gulf War Registry? Thank you. You do not have to sign up for the Gulf War Registry unless you want to. That doesn't affect your VA claim at all. If you file a claim for a presumptive illness, they will give you a CMP exam and they will, you know, if it's presumptive and they decide you have it, they'll just grant it. The Gulf War Registry is something separate.
CPO Deep Sea Diver. I was denied aid in attendance. The favorable findings in the decision was need for medication management and meal preparation. Isn't that enough to qualify? It depends. I've seen denials with favorable findings that say the veteran needs aid in attendance. I would definitely appeal it. If you do a higher level review and maybe ask for a conference with the decision review officer to see if that's not enough, like what they're looking for. But am I surprised? No. What do you think, Shannon?
I wish I could say I was surprised, but no, it sounds like that would be enough. Sometimes it just depends who you get making that decision. But I would, you know, if you can get your doctor, you know, maybe get another form, get it beefed up. You know, I don't know what else is in there it seems like it would be enough, but they denied it. So maybe add something else. Okay, this one's from John Johnson. I had a higher level review. It was really bad. What should I do next? So you have a couple of ways to go after a higher level review appeal if they deny. I recommend staying at the regional office because the board is taking 3 to 5 years, you know, to get a decision. It's really backed up. So unless you're over 75, in which case I do recommend going to the board, I would keep it at the regional office and I would file a supplemental claim. In order to do that, to file a supplemental claim appeal, you need some kind of new evidence. It can be medical evidence. It, depending on what the claim is, it can be a buddy statement, or you can put a statement in saying, you know, I don't think you've considered these things, or I don't think you understand how severe this condition is, or, you know, whatever it is that they denied. You can add evidence, and it doesn't have to be a lot of evidence. You just have to have something new that they haven't looked at before. So I would file a supplemental claim appeal and keep that going, and, you know, get some new evidence. Unless, of course, like I said, if you're over 75, I wouldn't hesitate to go to the board because those are happening quickly.
I agree. I feel like higher level review is 50-50. Either you get someone really good and they'll give you what you need, or you'll get someone really bad. So don't feel bad that it was bad. We experience that all the time. And like Shannon said, I'll go supplemental and put that new evidence in. If they deny it again, sometimes I'll do higher level review again, because I may get someone who is really good and is going to grant it or give me more favorable findings. Because like Shannon said, like, you're going to sit at the board for years. So I'd rather try at the regional office to the extent that I think is appropriate before going to the board. The board is my last resort, unless it's some kind of like toxic exposure where they're not going to grant that at the regional office. Though lately I just saw one where they granted bladder cancer at Fort McClellan, and they hadn't been granting anything at Fort McClellan. And that was a CMP exam. You never know. So I would try as long as you can at the regional office. And then if it's not going your way and you've put in all the evidence you can, then go to the board. Okay. Alex Garcia. Thank you, H&P, for all the great info. Follicular lymphoma approved by Legacy BVA, April, 2024, original ITF, February, 2018, rated 0% all the way back to February 18, despite treatment ending April, 2018 and no change in tumors until 2019 or 2020. Some notes indicate tumor size increased during that time. Tumor shrink 2020, full remission by 2022. Shouldn't I be rated at 100% from February 2018 until 6 months after either treatment or remission? No mandatory post-treatment DBQ exam was ever done. Failure on VA or me, but medical records clearly show my status and residuals as I progressed through treatment and wait and watch. No filing for residuals was ever done until PACT Act, still pending on that claim. Yeah, absolutely. You should, if you have active cancer, I know with the lymphomas and it can be different, because if it's like watchful waiting, they will rate it at 0%. But if it's active and you're receiving chemotherapy or radiation or something like that, then you should have that 100% rating. But with my experience with the lymphomas, they are, I don't know, they are bizarre, because sometimes even though you have the lymphoma and you don't have any active symptoms, they'll rate you at 0%. But if, like you're saying, you had active treatment and your records show that, then absolutely you should have had 100% rating until that active treatment stopped. And then you should be rated for residual issues through the treatment. I don't know your experience, Shannon, with lymphoma, but I do see that they don't really know how to handle it.
Yeah, watchful waiting doesn't always mean 100%, but if they're giving you chemo, then I think it does.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, this one's from Miss Ambiguity. Nehmer, Vietnam vet deceased 100% service connected in 2002, but denied ischemic heart condition. Found records dated 1987 that showed myocardial infarction, possibility for retro claim with 1987 effective date. This would be for surviving family member. In 2022, VA said nothing in the record for the heart condition and deemed ineligible for Nehmer claim. If I found a record for 87 and 74 for early repolarization, comment. I'm not sure what the question was. Is it, do they have a claim?
Yeah. So basically they're saying that they have a record from 1987, but one, did you have a claim pending in 1987? Because just because you have a record showing myocardial infarction, it didn't have to be a claim for the heart, but you had to have a claim for something open. Just because you had that condition back then, you have to initiate that claim. So if you filed for other things in 1987 or prior to while a claim was pending, then yeah, absolutely, you may be able to reopen it. But what, like, VA had to have notice of that record. It had to be a VA medical treatment record, or it had to be in the file. You can't just find a private record from 1987 and be like, here, he had this heart condition, because they had no notice of it.
Right. There has to be, we'd have to see the file and see whether VA's notice was triggered or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. James Manuel, any idea if any other toxic exposure claims are being addressed other than Gulf War and Vietnam, 1976 to 1980, Navy vet, our carrier had JP fuel, water all the time, had to drink it in shower. As a jet engine mechanic exposed to JP, TEC, a whole bunch of other hydraulic fluids plus asbestos. Just saying that you're a jet engine mechanic sparks for me because of all those exposures that you had. But those are claims that, like, you have to put in and say, I have developed coronary artery disease due to my exposures as a jet engine mechanic. I don't think, now that there's the TARA, the toxic exposure risk assessment, they are supposed to do that analysis every time, but I don't depend on them to do it. I'm going to specifically tell them I have this condition because I think that it's due to these exposures. Most likely, are you going to need a medical opinion? Yeah, but that doesn't mean that that's not what caused it. But presumptive, no.
What was the condition? I blacked out for a second.
There was no condition. They were just saying, is there any more presumptives? No, I have not seen any presumptives besides Vietnam and Blue Water Navy and Gulf War. Could that happen in the future? Maybe, but that's a lot, and I don't see it happening anytime soon. But that doesn't mean you can't file a claim for it and get it directly service connected, because being a jet engine mechanic back then, you had a lot of exposures and you're breathing it in all day, every day. Definitely there is medical research out there. So you may not get it presumptively service connection and it's connected and it's going to take more work, but you can get a medical opinion and get that direct service connected. Don't wait on the VA to make something presumptive in order to pursue it.
Absolutely. Okay, it's that time. Your firm has my case with joint attorney. When I move back to Florida, will you guys take my case back directly to you? I am not sure what the situation is. So I know that some cases, you know, we only handle VA disability cases. So if you have, you know, a case with a malpractice that we recommended you to, we're not necessarily handling it jointly. Unless we're handling your VA disability case, then we wouldn't we wouldn't just automatically take a case back unless you called us. And, but if it's a court case or something that we have recommended to someone else, then when it comes back down from the court, we do take those cases back. So it shouldn't have anything to do with where you live. So if you're in Florida or not, wouldn't have anything to do with it. But if we have recommended you out to somebody, then, you know, we will take you back once they've done their part for a court case or something like that.
Alan, can you submit more evidence to the RO on a remand in the legacy system? Absolutely. They're remanding it down. Who knows? That's keeping the record open, because they're either remanding it to get more records or they're remanding it to get another CMP exam. Yeah, you can continue to submit evidence on a remand in the legacy system.
Okay. Angel Marrero, I haven't been diagnosed with fibro, but I'm being treated with meds for the symptoms. Can I file a claim? I would see if I could get a diagnosis on that one. They're going to deny it. It's
maybe do an intent to file
fibro. Yeah, I would. I think that's a good idea. But try to get your doctor to actually make the diagnosis. If they're treating you with medications for the symptoms, they clearly think something's going on, and you might actually be surprised. I've had medical records that I pulled for a veteran, and they didn't know that they'd actually been diagnosed with something because the doctor never actually said it, but it's in the records. So just because they didn't tell you that you have a diagnosis for it doesn't mean you don't. So get your medical records, but talk to your doctor about it. See if they'll put the diagnosis in there. But yeah, as Allison said, for the time being, go ahead and file your intent to file and see what you can get.
And tell your doctor specifically, look, I'm trying to get disability benefits through the VA, and I can get it if I have a diagnosis of fibromyalgia. You're treating me for it. Do I have that? Is that something that you think I have? If so, like Shannon said, get them to put it in the record.
Yeah.
Margarita, have you had any success with toxic exposure claims from Fort McClellan? I have filed for thyroid cancer, hypothyroidism, hysterectomy, gallbladder removal, diabetes. Any advice is appreciated. Yes. I've had some success with it. Like I said, I recently saw a bladder cancer case get granted from a CMP exam. The cases that I'm seeing are if you were in military police at Fort McClellan, because there were a lot of exposures there. If you did training there for military police, I've had a couple where I've been able to get it granted at the board. But Fort McClellan seems like an animal that they really don't know how to handle, but they're starting to tackle it a little bit. Have you had any success, Shannon?
At the board only. Regional office, I haven't even seen anything granted. So I'm impressed that you've got one that was granted there. But it's a situation where it's not a presumptive, and the regional office says, oh, not presumptive, not connected. So they very often don't know what to do with it. So don't be discouraged if you get denied at the regional office. It may be something that you need to take to the board.
Honestly, what I think is really triggering these positive opinions are the TARA memos, because they're having to actually go in, and that's the toxic exposure risk assessment, and see if you had any exposures. And I'm seeing them actually put for other than related to any deployment, Fort McClellan. So if you have someone that's good reviewing your file, I mean, you can't really pick that or not. That's really helping it. So that's why I've been seeing positive lately. But most likely more success we've had it is at the board.
And remember to make an actual statement about your exposure. Mm-hmm. You know, don't just say I was at Fort McClellan. Talk about how you were exposed to the soil, the water, the chemicals, the whatever you were exposed to. You know, specifically talk about that in a statement to the VA. It makes their job easier. Okay, this one is from Julie Dupree. Can diabetes be linked to hypertension secondary? Yes, there's a connection between the two of them, but I'm trying to, then it goes the other way though. Or am I wrong?
Diabetes. So what I would think would be your hypertension is so severe that it's affecting your ability to exercise and you developed obesity, and obesity would be the intermediate step. That's going to be hard though.
Yeah. I was thinking the other way, like the diabetes might cause the hypertension. Because I think I have seen that, but I don't know that I've seen it diabetes secondary to the hypertension. But what I always kind of say is talk to your doctor. I am not a doctor. And there are a lot of medical things that I don't know. Every day I find out something new that can be connected to something else that I didn't know about. So, you know, my advice is always talk to a medical expert and find out what they say. Can diabetes be linked to hypertension? If it can, and they'll give you an opinion on it, great. Then I'm all over that. So, I'm never going to say no, it can't be linked together, but I'm not aware of that going that way. I think I've seen it go the other way, but talk to your doctor.
I agree. Jason R. Earhart. Why is community care so hard to get for me anyway? Dental. Thank you for what you do. Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to VA stuff. I don't know. I don't really know that much about community care. All I know is the easiest way to get dental is having TDIU or 100% rating. Do you have anything about that?
No, that's, I don't really know much about community care either. You know, the VA disability benefits is what we kind of specialize in as far as like compensation. So, as far as them referring people out and things like that, I wish I had a better answer for you on that. It kind of depends where your community is. Some areas it's not hard to get and some areas it's harder. So it's kind of what's available and what they're able to get you in for. Okay, this one is from Richard Unknown. I am currently diagnosed with 70% disability through PTSD. My VSO and I filed for unemployability since my conditions have gotten worse. I was denied simply because I have a college degree. They did not reference whatsoever any of my PTSD or other conditions. Only thing they referenced was my education. Everything that I found in the manual said they couldn't do this. Is this correct? Yes, you are correct. They can't do that. Whether you have an education or not has nothing to do with whether your service-connected disabilities prevent you from obtaining or maintaining work. That was wrong. Appeal it. Absolutely. You know, if that was a first decision, I would probably do a higher level review appeal on that and get somebody not quite as wrong to look at that, somebody that knows what they're doing. But yeah, no, they're not allowed to do that. That's wrong.
I tell my vets, like, don't be distraught if you get denied IU on the first time. I would say 98% of the time, you're going to get denied IU on the first time, because I feel like the VA thinks that if they deny you, you're not going to appeal it. And then that's one less person they have to pay. So definitely appeal that.
Yeah.
Ray McCarty. What are the chances of getting VA to fix teeth if Camp Lejeune era? I see people getting legal help for it. Like I said before, anything dental, I'm always like, if I can get them individual unemployability, that's the way, or 100% rating, that's the way to get the access to dental. The dental claims are really hard. I don't know specifically for Camp Lejeune if there's something different. Have you experienced that at all?
I have not. There's not a whole lot of compensation for dental. There's a one-time fix. And if you, like Allison said, if you get 100% or TDIU, then you get the dental care through the VA and it doesn't matter. So I don't know what your ratings are, or if that's a possibility for you, but I don't see, I don't see Camp Lejeune as being the easiest way to get your teeth fixed at the VA. I'll be honest. Oh, was it me? Greg Guthrie, thanks for doing this. What if I'm already rated at 70% for mental health for 4 years and the raters missed a medical diagnosis in my submission and records? I think that I rate higher probably 100%. My 70% is for SSD. My diagnosis by the VA is for PTSD. For my original mental health rating, I did not even have a CMP exam. I attended a telehealth CMP exam yesterday for an increase. Can you go back to the first part of that question?
Well, they consider that telehealth a CMP exam.
Yeah, they do. Let's see. So if you were rated 4 years ago at 70% and you didn't appeal it, there's not really much chance to go back. And if you didn't appeal it, your best bet is to go ahead and file the new claim, which it sounds like you did since you just had a new CMP exam, a file for increase. But there's very few ways to go back. There are some exceptions, but the general rule is you can only go back to this most recent claim if you didn't appeal that earlier one. That one became final.
Especially since that original rating was in AMA. I would say there was more exceptions than legacy. AMA right. is a lot harder to get it back, even if they missed it. But yeah, I would continue with the increased rating claim. Kenton Green, is foot drop a claim? VA rates Raiders 40% sciatica, low back, and right lower extremity radiculopathy with foot drop 80% total. Yeah, absolutely. Foot drop is a claim. I would think that what you potentially could try to get with that would be a loss of use or a higher rating for the right lower extremity radiculopathy. You're at 40%. Mm-hmm. To get to that 60%, I think you have to have it has to be severe with muscle atrophy. But I filed for foot drop and gotten it. It really just, it depends on what your medical records show. But yeah, I think it's a claim.
Yeah. And like Allison said, with loss of use, if you can't stand on that foot and balance on one foot, then you don't have the use of that foot. So that's something to look at as well. Okay, this one is from John, Navy Guy 6468 Adams. Rated at 93%. Filed for TDIU, was re-rated on current conditions. TDIU listed as moot due to increased rating of 100% P&T. Thank you for all you guys for all your guidance. So if you're asking, should it be moot? If they gave you the 100% all the way back to the date of your claim, then possibly yes, it is moot. But if there's any period of time, like after your claim, that is not covered by that 100%, because this is a trick that they pull a lot. They'll say, we'll give you 100% today, and your claim that you made for TDIU a year ago is now moot. And that is wrong. And you should appeal that. That is absolutely wrong. And they do it all the time. So look at your dates. If you filed that claim before that 100%, then the TDIU is not moot. But if it covers the same period of time, then it could be.
I feel like they're doing this way more now. Like I would see it sometimes, you know, 5 years ago, but it seems like every claim they're doing that, they're trying to get around giving an earlier effective date. So they'll say, yeah, we'll give you 100% and then make it moot before. I mean, I just had a case where they gave him 100% from January 2024 and it had been on appeal at the board since 2018. Mm-hmm. So they're hoping that the vet will be satisfied with that 100% and not try to get that TDIU for those 6 years. So,
right,
like Shannon
they
said,
hope you don't know the law. And the thing is, I tell people all the time, the best way to win at the VA is just not giving up. Mm-hmm. If you're persistent and keep appealing and keep insisting on having your way, it's, you know, sometimes they just give up. But yes, they're always going to try you and see, give you a little bit and see if you'll go away. So don't go away.
Thomas, I'm 100% service connected, permanent and total. I'm trying to get my effective dates grandfathered to when I got out for PTSD and combat TBI and GWI. What are my odds? It depends on if you had an open claim. I don't know. I would need more information on that. Is it like a situation where we're saying that they gave it to a certain effective date, but you had a claim pending? Then yeah, maybe you could get an earlier effective date for that, but I don't know. I would need more information.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't tell by those facts as to whether, you know, I don't know when you got out or, you know, there could be a way to go back, but the general rule is the date of your last claim. That's the effective date typically. But like we said, there are exceptions. So it really just depends whether you meet those exceptions.
Okay. Oh, this one. I had an open claim. That was the same one. I think I had an open claim in 1993 for everything. So, I mean, that's something where we would have to look at the case and
Did they decide that claim?
Yeah. Did they decide that claim?
Sitting there, you got a great way to go back.
Exactly. But that's not something that we can say the odds because we don't know the complete facts of the case. But yeah, if you had an open claim and they didn't make a decision on it, or you've continuously appealed it, or there were service records that were added that could reopen that original claim, there are a multitude of ways to attempt it, but we would need to see it to be able to give you an actual odds answer.
Okay, our next question is Twisted L. Granted, GERD at 30% had two symptoms from the 60% rating and statement on why it was severe impairment, HLR denied, and 4138 with the HLR was not reviewed, even though it all it stated was my contention with the rating. And that I believe not all evidence was reviewed. Original ITF was August 23, but told ITF was October and would not change. Q, if so, how do I Q an HLR? So if you filed an ITF in August and they said it was October, I'll start with that part of the question. That is Q, you know, unless there's something that was filed in between. So if you filed an ITF in August, then you filed a claim in September, and then you filed this claim in October, then this October claim doesn't go all the way back to that August ITF. It's only if there was something in between there that could have sucked up that ITF, then you don't get credit for that. And as far as how you file a Q, great question. There's no form for that. We don't know what it takes to get them to recognize them. I have filed them on every form there is. You can try one on a 4138. You can try writing a letter. You can try putting it on a supplemental appeal. I've heard lots of people say they've done lots of things. We don't know what works the best because all of them have been ignored, except sometimes they do see them and sometimes they will process them. So, you know, try putting it on a VA form and submitting it as a motion for revision of a previous claim, you know, due to clear and unmistakable error. That's what I would call it.
I don't think this necessarily needs a Q though, because if it's from August 23, that means there's still an open decision pending that you can appeal. So I recently had a case where the veteran clearly had exposure from over air service of Iraq or something, and he had prostate cancer, which with PACT Act is a reproductive issue. I went to higher level review, got not a great one. They denied it. And I was like, what do I do? It's still open. I don't want to file a Q. So what I did was I filed a supplemental claim. And on that form, I specifically wrote out, this is the regulation. He meets the Southwest Asia. This is the reproductive cancers. Prostate cancer is that. And they granted it like that. You don't necessarily need a Q if you still have an open claim pending, because you can still file an appeal that they're more likely to look at than a Q. Q is if it's from 5 years ago and you need to, you know, you're trying to reopen it from then.
Yeah, that's a good point. I missed that it was recent.
Frank Polino, I filed supplemental claim online. Do you have to submit a paper form 0995 also? No, they prefer that you file it online. You can do it through your e-benefits and you guys can file claims faster than us sometimes. So it should be in there. The only thing is if you don't have new and relevant evidence, but they are supposed to notify you if you didn't file new and relevant evidence. But filing it online, that's what they want. That's what they prefer.
Yeah. So two more questions, Allison. Does that sound good?
Yep.
Perfect. We're out of time. Okay. So Ms. Joystick, how do you get your own medical nexus? Do you need a lawyer to do that? Does your office have recommendations? You do not need a lawyer to do that. You need a doctor to do that. Your own doctor can do a medical nexus letter for you. And oftentimes they will. And that's the cheapest, fastest way to get a medical nexus is ask your doctor, could this current condition that you treat me for be related to my service or my service-connected condition? And can you write a letter as to that? Or can you put it in my medical records? Sometimes they're weird about not wanting to write a letter, but if they put it in your medical records, that's good enough. That's a nexus. It doesn't have to be a specific letter. So get them to put it in your records. And does your office have recommendations? That's my recommendation, is go to your primary care or your specialist that's treating you. That's what I would do.
And if they're even better, if they can put at least as likely as not in there, VA will love that, because that's the language that they're looking for to be service connected. Okay, last question. John Gamber, I'm 100% permanent in total. I want to file for aid and attendance. Will doing so possibly affect my 100%? Is it effective the date of the application? Aid and attendance would be effective the date of the application. If you have a rating that's under, what is it, 20 years, it can always be affected, the permanent and total. If you have conditions that potentially they think could get better, then yeah, it could be effective. For aid in attendance, though, it's normally that you file the 2680 and it's either you are qualified for it or not. They don't really delve into the specific conditions like they do if you were filing for individual unemployability. Right. That's my opinion on it. What do you think, Shannon?
Yeah, I don't think there's a problem with filing aid in attendance, but I am not a person who trusts the VA explicitly, so they always can mess with your rating. So just, you know, if this is, I think I'll just throw it up against the wall and see if they'll give me aid in attendance and you don't really need that kind of help, then I probably wouldn't file that. Not until I got my 100% to 20 years, at which point they can only reduce you if there's fraud. Mm-hmm. So it's always a gamble. If you have a strong claim, I still recommend filing them. But if you don't, or if your current ratings aren't solid, if something's improved, I wouldn't go near them. So that's just my thoughts on that. But Allison's right about the ANA. It doesn't usually spark a look at your whole file. They're going to look at, you know, just your current disabilities. So.
Well, thank you for joining us today. This is great. My first time doing it with Shannon. Had a great time. And as always, like and subscribe. And we'll be back next week with another live.
Thanks.
Thank you.